tonight is the first part of a five-week series I'm doing on to teach you how to make the time, space, and money to live your calling. And tonight we're going to start with how to do what you really love without sacrificing your lifestyle. And I just wanted to start with a little story about my first job. And when I was 16, I got my first job, and it was at the local Wendy's in my hometown. And when you start at Wendy's, your first job is on the fries. I don't know if any of you worked in the fast food industry before, but that's where I started anyway. After a couple weeks, I got lucky, and I got moved up to being in the back washing dishes. So that was my initial career path. And there are, you know, all sorts of people who work at places like that. And at the Wendy's I worked at, there was Patrick. And Patrick, if you could picture Will Smith in that movie, The Pursuit of Happiness, where he was homeless for a while, and he had a kid son, and they were trying to bring him up. He looked kind of like Will Smith did. He had those. This was back in the 80s, and he had those big glasses. And Patrick was probably about the same height, but maybe 20 pounds bigger. I mean, he was a big guy. He played football. And Patrick was a few years older than me. He was probably, I was 16. He may have been 20. And for Patrick, this was this was really his job. He worked there a lot more than I did. And he did basically the same thing I did, but he had been there longer, so he didn't have to do the fries. He could, like, cash people out and cook hamburgers and stuff. And so I'd been there for, 6 months or so. And one day I just kind of overheard Patrick talking to our manager about the kind of district manager was coming through, and he was going to interview people for management positions. And Patrick was going to go and get interviewed. And Patrick was real excited about it. And I remember him talking to one of our other managers and kind of getting tips on how to handle an interview. So about 2 weeks later was the big day, and Patrick came in, and it was funny because he had a tie on instead of the polyester blue and white striped shirts that we all had to wear. And then I was there, I guess, when he left and when he came back. And he came back, and everybody was asking him how it went. And he said, I think it went really well. Because, we talked for a little while about what I'd done, and then the rest of the time we mostly just talked about football. And so we were all thinking, okay, great, Patrick's got his big promotion, good for him. And then about, a week later we found out that he didn't get the job. And Patrick was really kind of upset about this. It was a kind of a setback for him, and he didn't really know why he didn't get the job or not, which really frustrated him. And I remember thinking, all I really want to do is, get off of washing dishes and move on to the cooking the hamburgers or somewhere where I can see people at least. And I remember one time I got passed over for a 10-cent per hour raise, and I only got a 5-cent per hour raise or something. And, I was a little mad, and it was because this guy didn't like me. But it didn't really change my life at all. And I didn't, I'm not Wendy's. I'm not this job. I'm just doing this to make money to pay for gas and stuff while I'm in high school. But, Patrick, who was making, maybe he made $1 an hour more than I did. So we basically made about the same thing, and he worked a lot more hours. But for him, I mean, this was really serious. I mean, he had a lot more at stake. And so I wanted to start with that story because I think sometimes whenever we start to talk about what we'd really love to do or what do we really want our lives to be like and how do we get there, it's not all about work, and we're going to talk about that tonight. It's not all about work, but work is a really central part of our lives. And so I kind of want to acknowledge that the situation that Patrick was in, and even though it was probably really different than all of our lives are right now, that sense of, feeling like a failure if you don't do well, or really having a lot of stress and stuff on your mind about what's going to happen to you at work, really plays heavily on most of our lives and has for me, certainly my work. So I'm going to come back and talk a little bit more at the end. But tonight that's going to set up what we're going to do tonight and talking about how do you start to really do what you love without having to, throw everything at risk about your job. So just as a little logistics here. The call is an interactive call, and I'm going to ask some questions, and hopefully feel free to shout out. Feel free not to, too, if you're not in a place where you can do it or you're not comfortable doing that. That's fine, too. I am recording the call, so just use your first name, and please introduce yourself whenever you make a comment so we know who we're talking to. And then if you don't have mute on your cell phone or your phone and you want to mute yourself, you can also do it by just pressing *6. And then if you want to unmute, just press *6 again. And then I'll be putting the recording up on my website, and we'll send all of you all a link, so you don't need to take notes. If you want to be able to listen to this again, you'll have that opportunity. So what I'd like to do, just as kind of an opening question and get the discussion going, is I would love for y'all to go around and just kind of tell us what your first name is, and then tell us all what your first real job was. So anybody feel free to jump in, or I'll call on someone.
I'll go first. This is Elizabeth.
Okay.
I had a cool job, my first job. I worked in a chocolate store.
All right.
Yeah, and I sold chocolates, so yeah, that was kind of cool. I had a kind of an envious job, but I grew up in a kind of a tourist town, so.
Okay. Excellent. Who else wants to share their first job?
This is Lauren, and I worked at Libertyland, which was a small theme park in Memphis, Tennessee, and I was in sales in Colonial Land. So sometimes I sold candy, and sometimes it was flowers, and sometimes it was stuffed animals.
Okay, that's great. Anybody else?
Yeah, this is Jeff, and my first job was at an apartment building where I actually was doing some lawn maintenance and this type of thing, and had a great time. It was a lot of fun.
Great.
This is Scott. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I can go last, it sounds like.
This is Scott. My first job was really almost entrepreneurial in nature. I was a kid with a mower and a snow shovel, so I mowed lawns all summer and shoveled driveways all winter. So
all right.
That was really my first job.
Excellent. Was there somebody else?
All right, this is Joe. I'll go now.
Okay. All right.
All right, my first job was basically working at a drapery store. I got the job by when I was in school. I was trying to sell her advertising in one of our local papers, and I kept coming back, didn't give up. And so when I graduated, I went to her looking for a job, and she hired me. So.
Excellent. You sold your way into a job.
You got it.
All right. Great. So thanks for sharing all that. It's funny how those first jobs, they have a certain memory for us, right? I remember all the people I worked with at the Wendy's and the stuff we do after work and all those kind of things, because it's a different kind of work. For me anyway, it was more it was more about making money at the time than any kind of career or something that was more of a kind of fixture in my life or something that I wanted to do. I wanted to ask another question, and that is, what do you think, what would be part of your dream life if I had a magic wand that I could wave right now, it could change your life? I mean, what are just some of the components? It doesn't have to be the whole thing, but anybody can just throw out stuff that they think about.
Working in a team environment.
All right. You know, for me, when I was getting ready for this, I was searching for some visuals on dream life, and it actually turns out that I think it's Hasbro makes this little dream life in a box that you can buy, actually. It's a TV plug-in game, and you can choose your new lifestyle, and you can make new friends, and pick your fashion all at the same time, all in a box. those are the components for the game, but I mean, I think a lot of things I've heard other people say too is like, you know, plenty of money, no worries about money, a chance to do work that you love. I mean, are any of those ring true with you guys?
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is Lauren. I'd like to do work that develops people instead of just developing products.
Yeah, okay. So, work with more meaning, something that where you feel like there's more lasting impact to what you've done.
Right.
Yeah. So those are all really good. Those are all really good things that we can work with. But if I was going to ask you what's preventing you from living your sort of dream life right now, what are some of the things that come to mind?
The unsteadiness of the income if I made a switch.
Okay. So where's the money going to come from? Okay. Anybody else? Anybody relate to that? So is there anything else? A lot of people, another thing I hear a lot is just, how would I have time to do that with everything else I have going on in my life?
Yeah.
Can you guys relate to that? Especially if you have kids or anything else in your life, actually, with the way things are right now.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think also another major factor would be health care.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, health insurance, yeah.
Ties in with risk aversion. So.
Yeah, so like health care, if you wanted to go out and do something on your own instead of working at a company, for example. Is that what you meant?
Yes.
Yep, spot on.
Yeah.
This is Elizabeth, because my husband has his own business. I've always worked outside the house, and we've had my insurance too. So if I start my own business, then we would definitely have to worry about that.
Yeah. I think we should record this call and send it to Obama. Everybody really is worried about that. Yeah, if you wanted to work for yourself. That's right. And that's kind of a piece of money too, right? I mean, so that you could theoretically buy insurance, but it's really expensive. So that's another thing. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, what are the risks? That's kind of the topic I think we're on right now. What
Joe.
Else do you worry about doing something like that?
And this is Joe. I think part of the problem is that I know a lot of folks that I've worked with in corporate America that have stuck in a job that they've actually detested, and they bring down everyone else's morale, but the only reason they're sticking in there is because of health insurance and some stable income.
Yeah.
Take those risks, and all of a sudden you can have a more productive workforce, theoretically.
Right, right. That's right. It impacts other people, too, when people stay in a job they don't like. That's a really good point. Yeah. Well, so, I think I agree with you. I think time and money are the big two hurdles that everybody kind of deals with. And I guess what I want to say to you guys is let's just agree to accept it. That is true. Because they are real hurdles. I mean, healthcare is a real issue. Steady of income when you're starting something new is an issue. And so, and having time to do that and then be a responsible parent, spouse, member of your community, and still work the kind of hours that we have to work today. Those are all things that are real. And so I think that if we try to deny that those are real, I mean, I think if we try to deny that those are real, we can kind of fool ourselves and take more risk even than we want to do. And I think that's what people sense when they stay where they are, is that these are really risky. But the only other option that's popular that you hear a lot about is, oh, we'll just go do what you love and the money will follow. And I think there's a part of us that doesn't jive with our sense of reality or what we've experienced. And I think that's wise and that's true. So I don't want to say that I'm not going to tell you to blow those off. And I'm going to tell you that time and money are something that we need to deal with. And so I'm going to set that elephant in the middle of the room. Let's call it an elephant. And then we're going to talk about over the next 4 weeks and tonight, that's what we're going to talk about. It's like, how do we deal with the time and the money issues? Because they are the biggest hurdles, I think, between doing what we're doing right now and moving to something that's really meaningful. So that's out there. So so given that we have this elephant in the room and we're going to acknowledge it, what if let's set it aside for a minute though and talk about what would you do if you could fix that? If I could, if I was the guy with the balloons and the giant checks that comes to people's houses and knocks on your door, and if I could guarantee you, $100 million or whatever it would take, would you be happy? Would that do it? Because that would take care of all the money issues for sure, and probably the time too. What do you guys think about that?
Probably not. This is Joe.
Yeah, talk more about that.
Well, I'll give two examples. I worked at one time at a sweepstakes company where we gave out, you know, $10 million every 2 years to people who had played the sweepstakes lottery, you know, Publishers Clearinghouse type thing, right?
Yeah.
And these people were not, well, generally were not well off. There were some people that were well off that actually won, which was interesting there. Very often, the individuals that were not well off, that we had given them this a lot of money relative to their standard, they just ended up getting themselves into further trouble because they didn't know how to spend it. They weren't familiar with the difficulties of when you have some money, what it means, and you think that it makes no sense. You know, people just, but they do. They just lose track of what they're spending. They get themselves beyond where they should have been, and they ended up losing it all anyways. Or they try to sell it off to pay off their debt, and that created a whole slew of other issues. Also, if you're just given something and you don't earn it, you appreciate it less. And I think part of, at least for me, what gives me motivation is the desire and the fact that you're achieving something, that you've worked hard, you've been recognized or rewarded for what you've done, and the compensation comes in with that. So if it was just given to me, then I would lose sort of that motivation to get what I'm trying to.
Yeah, those are great. And I love the kind of lottery example because I think there's a lot of evidence to back that up, that even people who do get all the money in the world, so the money obstacle is removed, that in fact makes things worse or certainly not better for them. So what, let's talk to you guys. Let's see. But what if, let's say, given all that trouble, is how about maybe another way I could ask it is, you know, what would you do if you could do anything, if I could just remove this barrier? I mean, it is kind of a trick question that I'm asking, I guess. And I ask because, you know, I always thought about, the story of the genie coming out of the lamp and you get the three wishes. The big joke everybody always talks about is, you know, I would ask for an infinite number of wishes, you know. And I think people say that because we don't – I don't think most of us have a really clear picture of what we would want our lives to be if we could just wave a magic wand. I want to wave a magic wand and sort of change everything. And I think there's just a little bit of a sense of fear. If I could do that, what if I pick wrong? Kind of like do I make a deal and then there's some weird clauses attached, so I have to outthink every possible thing that could go wrong. I mean, it's just a lot of pressure to try to think about, wham, could I do it? And so one way to think about that is just that, you know, you could blame all of us. Okay, we're not, you know, we're not vision oriented enough, or we just can't dream big enough. I mean, you can go down the list of all the books that would tell you that. But I don't think that's really what the problem is. I don't think there's anything wrong with any of us, and I don't think that if we sat around and dreamed or did exercises that we'd get something a whole lot better than we would just by writing down real quickly what we know that we like about our lives. And I think what's going on is that we think about things like the Publishers Clearinghouse or, Joe, like the sweepstakes people you just talked about. You think that you can fix the money issue or you can fix the time issue. And, you know, if you had a big enough check or enough time in the day, that those would go away and then everything will be good. And I think from those examples that Joe just gave us, I don't think that's right. And so what I want to talk about now is a little bit about what does it mean to, you know, what can you fix and then what can't you fix? And I don't know, it's not something that I don't know that y'all have ever thought about before, but I have, I found this little, one of those little kind of fake motivational posters, and it's a picture of a Australian border collie playing with a cat, and he's kind of biting the cat between the cat's legs. And the funny caption is, it says, neutering. and it says, you're doing it wrong, 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 and it's written kind of like the Cat Has Cheeseburger website or whatever. And you know, I think, you know, like a dog or cat, you can fix them. I mean, and what does it mean to fix a dog or cat? I mean, you neuter them. I mean, and when that's done, that's done. You know, there's no question. They can't have puppies. They can't have kittens anymore. So, you know, that's something you can fix. It's permanent. You can do it. And my definition for something you can fix is, or a way to think about that is, you know, can you write a check and make it go away forever? So can you write a check and make it go away forever? So, yeah, I can write a check and get my dog fixed, and she's not going to ever have puppies again. You know, if I have a flat tire, I can pay somebody to fix it, and that problem's not going to come back ever again unless I run over another nail or something. But can you fix, you know, being happy? Can you fix living your dream life? Can you fix making your life perfect? You know, can you write a check and make that, you know, go away forever? You know, you can't. We know that, right? I mean, look at Michael Jackson. He had all the money in the world. He wasn't happy. You can't buy that kind of thing. And so so we need a way to think about this a little bit differently, because if, you know, if time and money are really the things that are preventing us from living our lives the way we want to live, and there's no way to fix them, we could be wasting a lot of energy on dealing with that, an issue that you could never really fix. So I wanted to give you another example just to kind of illustrate this again. And I have some family friends, and I'll call them Jack and Kathy for their privacy's sake. But, you know, there are a couple, and Kathy's a real kind of really driven person. She was real successful in her career. She's one of these people who always has everything together. You know, if you went on a picnic for her, she'd have the little salt and pepper shakers and everything would be together. And she really never got flustered with any of that stuff. And, you know, Jack's one of these people who is like he's so friendly. He's everybody's best friend. But, you know, he's not exactly on top of everything. He's more of kind of a big picture guy. And a lot of times when he walks around, his shirt tail's untucked in the back and he's kind of sloppy, and he's always late. He doesn't do anything. So, you know, Jack and Kathy have been married for a long time, and they really love each other. But, you know, Kathy's talking to a friend, and she's just like, you know, Jack is just driving me crazy. I can't get him to put the dishes away. I can't tell when he's gonna be home. You know, he never remembers to do the stuff that I tell him to do. So, you know, how can I, you know, I just don't know if I can stay in this marriage, or I don't know how I'm going to deal with it. And her friend told her, you know, you're never going to fix Jack. You know, all you can do is kind of accept how he is, and then work on how you respond to that. So I think, you know, relationships and things with people are also things that, you know, I think we can all relate to the fact people don't change, and you're not going to fix somebody. And it's not a relationship's not a kind of a one-time thing. It's like, planting a crop. You've got to plant the seeds, then you've got to water it, you've got to weed it, you've got to keep the bugs off of it, and you've got to kind of manage that process so that it stays doing in line with where it wants to go. You know, sometimes the weather's not perfect or whatever, but you keep it on a track, and then you'll get your corn crop or your cotton crop later on. You know, I think the same kind of thing happens with the whole kind of weight loss industry, where, you know, I'm 20 pounds overweight, and, you know, I want to fix this problem. I don't want to be overweight anymore. And so, you know, I go do a 12-week plan, or I do Atkins, or I do South Beach or whatever, and you'll lose the weight. They work. Those diets work. But what happens? You know, I think statistics say people gain back the weight they lost plus a little bit usually. That's the normal thing. And I think that's a symptom of the same kind of issue. It's we want to fix something that really is something that kind of needs to be managed, because the people who are successful long term at kind of living healthy or really changing their diets, like somebody who's had a heart attack and really had to adjust how they eat, or they're going to die, or somebody with diabetes, a lot of times those people also lose weight and get in great shape and are able to maintain it because they had a motivation to really manage the disease or manage their bodies more than they had before. And so they naturally become more healthy because they're working in the right zone. So does that, do you guys follow the whole, my whole manage versus fix?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So how does that apply to our work life and our life and all these things we want to do and moving from, you know, somebody who's stuck in a job that they hate because they're afraid of health insurance and these other things. And so, I'll tell you a story about a woman that I met named Mary. She and I flew on a flight together, and we were just kind of chatting and asking each other what we did and all. And she said, you know, I'm a consultant, and I travel for a living, and she lived in San Francisco. And I told her, you know, one of the things I do is help people figure out what their callings are and then help them live that way. And she kind of like had a kind of, you know, not the quiet, dismissive tone. She said, well, you know, I don't really know what mine would be. And then we talked for a while longer, and then she stopped me and she said, oh, wait, you know, I think I really do know what I'd like to do, and I'd really like to work with kids. And then, like, just a beat later, she said, but you can't make any money doing that. And, you know, I could tell that she had gone through the whole process we're talking about, right? What's my dream? You know, well, if I thought about it, I'd really like to work on kids. And then she ran up to the money time thing and just stopped, and that was it. And, you know, I could just tell she wasn't going to go any further because she had hit those barriers, you know, and until she got to the point where she could fix the money and the time. So, you know, a lot of times we think about that's retirement, right? We're going to save all this money, and then when I'm 70, I'm going to go be like that guy on the commercial, and I'm going to travel around and take photos, you know, and I'm going to be the next Ansel Adams, you know. And so we think that we have to wait until we get to the end of our lives or we finally have enough money, whatever that is, to go do this. And so, you know, at first I was thinking, well, you know, of course Mary could go work with kids, you know, she could be a big sister somewhere. She could go, you know, read at an elementary school. You know, I didn't talk to her much about what that meant to her working with kids, but, you know, volunteer with kids, there's tons of opportunities to do that, right? So I was thinking, wow, what a shame that she just won't, you know, take the step to go do that. But then I thought about it a little bit more, and I kind of realized that, you know, I bet Mary has probably looked into a lot of those things of working with kids, and she probably knows more than I do about all the different things you can do, because that's not one of my big things. And what I realized, that where Mary kind of was in her head or where she was stuck, was that to her, what you did was really kind of who you are. So she was a consultant. That's what she did. And I think what she was thinking, which is where a trap a lot of us can get into, is that, you know, if I want to work with kids, it's got to be my thing. You know, it's got to be who I am, what I do. And if I don't pour all of myself into it, then it's not going to be any good, or I won't make much of a difference, or it won't be real. And so Mary's kind of confusing this idea of what she did to make money and then what she did to make a difference. And so what, if you think back to this idea of the first place she went, you know, I can't make any money doing that. You know, oh, I'm busy, I travel all the time. You know, those are there. Like I said, we're not going to ignore those for the next few weeks. Those are things that we are going to take head on and find real ways to work around so that those don't become hurdles anymore. But for Mary, that's all it was. It was like because she couldn't fix the money, because she couldn't fix the time and have it, you know, write a check and make it go away forever, then that meant she was stopped and she couldn't go any further and she couldn't go have fun with kids and the kids wouldn't get Mary and all she could do. So what I want to emphasize and what will be kind of throughout the rest of this and has been some of the stuff I've talked about before is that you got to have fun first. You know, the kids have got to come first, and not because she ought to do that or it's a morally or ethically kind of the right thing to do. I mean, it is all that too, of course, and there are, those benefits will come, and we'll talk about that later. But more for just from a purely pragmatic, practical approach of, you know, I am here in my life. Mary is here in her life. She knows there's something that she thinks she wants to do. Maybe she doesn't know much about it yet, but she wants to go change. She wants to go work with kids. And if she's been thinking about that for a long time, I'm sure that she would be great at doing that. So just from a practical standpoint, to go from consultant to working with kids, why stop yourself by trying to fix something that can never be fixed? So what my message is have fun first. Have fun first. Just go take a little bit of time and go ahead and work with the kids so that you'll start to see what you like. And she might not like the first thing she tries. She may work with the wrong age group kid or need to try something else. But if she just did a few things, she'd start to figure that out. That's not that difficult, and she would know right away if she took action and did that. And it's that taking action and trying something that is what starts to give you the motivation to really work on managing and just dealing with the elephant in the room, the money and time issues that are really there, because we have to earn an income to pay for our houses and our food and our iPhones and everything else. So we have to kind of turn things upside down, and that's going to be our philosophy is, you know, eat your dessert first, you know, have your fun first. And when you got a little bit of fun and a little bit of energy from that, you're going to be a lot more motivated, because you'll start to see what I'm going to get to do when I can manage my time and my money, and that it really is something meaningful. And, you know, I really am developing people instead of products, and I really am making a difference. So you need to feel that first. Otherwise, it's all theoretical, and then you can get into your head and start to think, oh, you know, maybe I'm kidding myself, or I'd never be good, and all these kind of things. So that's the message. Have fun first. Let me stop and ask, does anybody have any questions on that? Any comments, or did that bring up any thoughts in any of your minds?
Well, this is Elizabeth. So basically, how my understanding is, because you need to actually experience it. You actually have to taste it, smell it, touch it, feel it. And
yes, exactly.
You want to do. Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's if you just think about it, you're wrong, first of all, because it's not as specific as it would be if you do it and you don't really know. And then the act of using your senses to do it really will kind of tap into your intuition about what you need to be doing or whether it's right for you or not. And that's a much more accurate indicator than any kind of analysis you can do in your head of kind of, you know, checks of things I've liked before or not. I mean, that's just not enough, not rich enough or unique enough to you. So you need to try it to do it. And you don't need to wait for the time and the money. I guess that's the other big message, is that those are going to be there. We need to work with those. But any of you on this call, you no longer have the excuse of time and money to not do what you think you should be doing, because I'm going to give you the tools to work with that. So then the other thing that we need to talk about, maybe it's the little baby elephant in the room, or maybe it's a bigger elephant, but the other thing is what's going on in Mary's head when she's thinking about that and kind of talking herself out of going to be a big sister for somebody. And I think what she's thinking in her head is, probably wouldn't be good enough, or I might not let him down, or, you know, maybe I'll have to travel and I won't be able to be there for her, and that'll be awful. And, you know, he could go on and on and on, and all of a sudden, you know, it's the worst thing you could ever do in your life, even though it's this thing that you're born to do and you're going to be great at, and all of your friends probably know that you should have done it when you were in college. You know, everybody else knows it about Mary. So, but I think what's going on in her head is, some people call it resistance. It's this kind of the devil in your head who tells you you're no good or you don't want to do this. And it's kind of the part of us that keeps us safe because it doesn't want us to change, and not changing. And so if you have the outline that I sent you, this is the F word. And the F word is fear. And so what I think about with fear is that great quote from FDR's inauguration speech. And I had forgotten this until I looked it up today, but he gave that speech in 1933, and it was right at the worst time of the Depression. So it's a time a lot like now in the economy, actually. And the quote everybody remembers is, you know, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And I always thought that was kind of just catchy, memorable. But the more I've kind of lived it and thought about it, what he's saying is that fear's kind of like, like I said, it's the other elephant in the room. It's just like time and money. You know, fear doesn't go away. So, and I've met people who are, you know, super successful people, and I've read about people who are kind of famous people, and to a person, they all say, you know, you've made it now, right? You don't get stage fright anymore. You're not nervous before you go play a big game or when you have to give a speech or something. And they say, no, you're always nervous. It just kind of never goes away. But what they've learned is that not to be afraid when the fear comes, but just to know that that's just normal. And it's especially normal whenever you're making a change. So, and why that's so kind of powerful and why that's so important for us as we're moving into to doing something new, especially something that's important to us. So why that's important is that if we can know that fear is normal, then we don't have to do the things to try to make the fear go away. We can just kind of let fear be there, or we can come. There are a lot of ways that we can talk about how to manage fear. But we can say, okay, fear, you're there, but not let that stop us from doing it. So just like with the money and the time, let's say, okay, fear, we're going to manage you because I can say, you know, you're going to be there with me no matter how great I am or what if Mary was the next Marion Wright Edelman and start the Children's Defense Fund or whatever, she's still probably going to have those same doubts, whatever they are for her right now. So we'll just acknowledge there's fear. There's money. There's time. We're going to deal with that. And here's fear. And we're going to manage that too. So one thing I want to give you, this is something I learned kind of the hard way, I guess. Well, I was in a job that I really hated at one point in my career, and I'm not going to say which one it was. And I was just dying to get out of it, you know, almost literally. I was really stressed out. And I had found, I thought, another job, and everything had gone well. I had had, you know, the first phone interview, I'd gone in and been interviewed by this whole panel of people, and I'd gotten good feedback from that, and it looked like, hey, everything's great, and I'm finally going to sort of escape from this bad situation I'm in. And so I was really excited, and I didn't hear anything for a couple of days. I guess I was a little surprised. And then I got a phone call from the guy who would be my manager, and he said, hey, Alan, you did great, and we really like to hire you, but we just looked at our strategy, and we don't think hiring for this position makes much sense for us now, and so we're just not gonna be able to do anything. And I was like, oh, crap, you know, because you know how it is, like when you know you're like, you're almost done with something, you kind of let stuff slide because it's like, okay, I'm going to be gone. This isn't going to be my problem anymore. But that was really like the only kind of hope I had out there. I didn't have a lot of other job offers at the time. So there I was, just kind of hosed, and I couldn't do anything. And I was like, oh, my God, you know, what am I going to do? And so what I was just kind of forced to do at that point, even in this tough job situation, was I just kind of had to say, okay, you know, I just kind of had to give in, and I kind of quit fighting the awful job, and I just decided, you know, what can I do? What can I control? And what are the things that are the things that I can use that are things I do well? And I'll just start doing those. And I know they may not be enough to do well in this job or reduce the stress or whatever else, but it's all I can do right now because I just don't want to lose my job, and I'm to like hang on to something else. So I just started doing that, and it wasn't stuff that I had really done before. And what I found was, like, over a month, my performance actually really went up in that job, and I was less stressed, and I wasn't so focused on getting out of there, but I was more kind of managing the pain of that job, and I was, you know, I was building relationships with people, I was coming up with ideas, I hadn't fixed all the other things that were bugging me, but, you know, it was more tolerable than I ever thought it could have been. So, you know, one of the things you can do when you face that sense of, you know, I'm in a job that, you know, I just don't know if I can take this anymore, and I really just want to jump ship and go do something else. What you can do is just take a breath and just say, you know, I'm not going to fight this job anymore. I'm not going to fight it. I'm going to think about what I do well. I'm going to do what I do well, and I'm going to let happen whatever happens. And what my experience has been is that act of doing that, of just saying, I'm going to do what I can do, tends to make the fear go away, and you just naturally sort of start doing the things that you could do. So that's one trick to deal with the fear that comes up. So,